Good morning, everyone. We are reading in Book 2, Canto 7, and we stopped our study at the break on page 208. We are following King Aswapati on his descent into the night. He is going deep down to the dark roots of falsehood and evil to find out how they can be transformed. And that's a very terrible journey. It is not over yet. Before we start, I just want to point out something to you. Today we've been given a gift. There's a little pile of cards here. These are cards that have been printed for Matrimandir. But somebody has purchased them for us to everybody can take one as they leave the very beautiful different cards of Matrimandir. And since the proceeds are meant to go to Matrimandir, if you feel like you can make a little offering of your own. Mm-hmm. So anybody can pick one up as you go out. Mm-hmm. So we're at page 208 at the break. Aswapati is in a place where truth was exiled, lest she should dare to speak and hurt the heart of darkness with her light, or bring her pride of knowledge to blaspheme the settled anarchy of established things in that terrible nether world. So we'll read on from there. Would you start, Patty?
Then the scene changed, but kept its dreadful core. Altering its form, the life remained the same. A capital was there without a state. It had no ruler, only groups that strove. He saw a city of ancient ignorance, founded upon a soul, a soil that knew not light. There each in its own darkness walked alone. Only they agreed to differ in evil's paths, to live in their own way, for their own selves, or to enforce a common lie and wrong. Their ego was lord upon his peacock's seat, and falsehood sat beside him, his mate and queen. The world turned to them as heaven, to truth and God. Injustice, justified by firm decree, the sovereign weights of error's legalized trade, but all the weights were false and none the same. Ever she watched with her balance, and a sword, lest any sacrilegious word expose the sanctified formulas of her old misrule. In high professions wrapped, self-will walked wide, and license stalked, prating of order and right. There was no altar raised to liberty. True freedom was abhorred and hunted down. Harmony and tolerance nowhere could be seen. Each group proclaimed its dire and naked law.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about this passage? Yes?
I do not understand the sentence, bring her pride of knowledge to blaspheme the settled anarchy of established things.
Mm. No? This is truth. Truth is exiled.
Yeah.
They don't want to have anything to do with truth. No? Because she has some light to cast. No? But to them, that is abhorrent, this pride of knowledge that the truth brings, because that light of hers hurts this heart of darkness. And this settled anarchy of established things, the way things are in that realm, it's an anarchy. There is no government rule. Everybody's living for themselves, no? All warred against all, but with a common hate turned on the mind that sorts higher good. So that is, they don't want to know anything about truth that will disturb the way things are settled and established in that world. Is that a bit clearer?
That is to blaspheme for them.
Yes, to blaspheme for them. Fortunately, I have somebody to look after me.
Yes.
Can't clear you, hear you clearly, Chitra. Sorry, which line are we at?
Then ego was lord upon his peacock seat.
Mm.
So peacock, any special significance
Well, yes, a peacock represents pride, no? Showing off. I'm the most beautiful. I'm the best.
It sounds familiar.
Yeah. So there's also the idea of the peacock throne. Have you heard of that? That, of course, came originally from India, but it was stolen and became the throne of the emperors of Iran. Now I don't know where it is. Might be in London.
Along with that Kohinoor, it has gone to the British Museum?
I think it may be in London, yes. Sorry. Sorry. Many of these treasures have landed up in London. Yeah. Quite a lot in Berlin also. Anyway, yes.
I don't know if it takes part of the image of the peacock. As beautiful as the peacock is and so on, its voice is a hideous squawk.
But it's a kind of cry of victory. No, I'm the chief.
I don't understand the lines 250 and 251.
Yes. There was a time when each city-state had its own standards for trade. Its own coins, its own weights to be used in the market. No? And so he's saying that in this city, this capital that is there, there's no state, but there's a capital city, it's based on falsehood and injustice rules there. Justice is often shown standing with a balance and scales and a sword, no?
And blindfold,
to be impartial and to maintain justice and right. But here, instead of justice, it's injustice is ruling by firm decree. No? And so one of the things that she justifies is the sovereign weights. It used to be in every marketplace that the standard weights were there, and that's what had to be used when buying and selling things. No, so these sovereign weights, this is errors legalized trade. These are not just weights. No, all the weights were false. None of them were the same. So injustice is watching with her balance and her sword. It's just a perverted image of justice, no? She's there to punish any sacrilegious word that would expose the sanctified formulas of her old misrule, this long-established rule of falsehood and injustice. Prating, that comes next, no? Prating. It means preaching.
Preaching nonsense.
Also nonsense, yeah. What does Rand Hicks say? I would say prating, it's somebody...
Stop prating.
Talking nonsense. But it's also kind of imposing on people. You're pretending that you have a lot of knowledge, but what you are speaking is falsehood. It's not right.
Is it related to prat?
Probably. A prat is a person who prates, yeah.
To chatter idly and without...
Without purpose. So, but here what it is, they are prating of order and right. That's what they are preaching, talking about. But that has no meaning in this world of falsehood, no? This is license. This license, if license rules, there's no order, there's no right. Everything is disordered. So self-will, he disguises himself in these high professions. But I know the truth, I know what's right, it's done like this and like that. But all this is baseless. Professions, when you pretend something, pretend to be virtuous and to be able to mediate between people and all that. But he can't do that.
But it's also ineffective, no? Because they're not living the thing they're
right.
Preaching about.
Right, yes. Yes, exactly.
I think I understood correctly. You said that now and now, Ashwapati went to descended into nine.
Yes.
And these are the character, the characteristics of man.
Yes.
And with an intention that he would transform that art,
He wants to see what is the root of imperfection in life.
But he went consciously, so he could see and he could explain all these things. Those who go and live there unconsciously, just they are part of that.
They are part of that world, yeah.
This kind of world is also, our features are also existing in the present time. And those who want to bring any change,
I think it takes really exceptional beings to deliberately go there and try to bring about this transformation. But people who have come with a mission will, from time to time, find themselves faced with expressions of this level in our world, no? And then they will have to find out the way to deal with it, as Aswapati has to do, no? We just heard Mother reading at the end. It becomes so terrible. It's almost as if his life is being sucked out of him. And only the strength of his spirit, that naked strength of his spirit, is able to face that naked hell, this world of evil and falsehood and cruelty and distortion, of death also. Everything that contradicts the divine existence and consciousness and bliss.
It's only some that are confronted with this.
Sorry?
It's only some who are confronted with this. I think in our villages, the majority of us are constantly confronted with this.
Well, that's because we have come here to take part in a very special work, not on mission. But ordinary people, they don't even notice this kind of thing. Margaret?
Yeah. For me, when I see how Sri Aurobindo or Aswapati went in this darkness, and I think the Mother Sri Aurobindo said also, we don't have to do it by our own, we can call for
their help. Yeah.
That is the thing, even if we are faced.
We don't have to deliberately do it. But if we are faced with it, if we become aware of it, like Rita says, at that moment, the only thing we can do is call for their intervention.
For me, it is that this is any day the whole process for us incarnate on earth, who are even in the secret of the leader, that is the essence that we from our shall be the symbol to call from above and the descent that the help can come from the,
right.
The divine.
Yes.
In everything, to call, in every issue.
Yes.
Doesn't anyone in anywhere in the world who is progressing, do they not excite the interest of these forces?
Yes, definitely.
Whether they're
yes.
following Sri Aurobindo
or not. Yes.
The difference is that we have the capacity to...
We've been offered this possibility. We know the names of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. We've learned a little something about their work. And when we see these terrible injustices and dreadful things happening in the world, at least we can have this awareness that there are forces of darkness that are feeding all that, that are trying to bring those feelings into each of us also, who will be just too delighted if we get upset and participate, carried away. So as soon as we become aware of that, we have to call for help.
But for me, the more help is to know that this is a time, but we go somewhere else. Not this alone is terrible, but we know that it's something that we have to pass through.
Yeah, I think we haven't quite come. Yeah. Did we come to it? It said that, I think we read it, no? Yeah. That the road to heaven passes close by this realm. Mm? And that's when we have to be these heroes and warriors of the army of light. We have to be very, very careful and cautious and conscious and be ready to, aware that at any moment, I think Mother once told Amal, even in the ashram, she said, look, there's a huge battle going on. No? And if you're careless, you will get wounded. be aware of it. It means consciousness at every moment of what you are really here for. So by coming to Oroville, we've agreed to be part of this battle in some small way. Yeah? This battle of the past against the future.
And it is also expressed in the secret of the leader that this battle goes on, and it's only possible to clear it and to go through it with the help of
the higher forces.
Yeah. And Agni,
Agni, the pure flame of aspiration for the truth. Indra maybe stands for clear discernment and the power of light.
I think it's also a battle of sincerity against insincerity within our own being, because
right.
We have always those two things.
Mm.
Mother had said that's the greatest fault is insincerity, and it leads to ruin.
Mm.
If you don't mean what you say I'm going to do this, then you don't do it. It creates a lot of confusion, no?
It's what this prating and these high professions, no? There's something in the being that pretends insincerity. Yeah. So the description goes on. We just have to pass through this difficult two cantos.
A frame of ethics not with scriptural rules, or a theory passionately believed and praised, a table scene of high heaven's sacred code, a formal practice made an iron show, gave to a rude and ruthless warrior kind, drawn from the savage bowels of the earth, a proud stern poise of harsh nobility, a civic posture rigid and formidable, but all their private acts belied the pose, power and utility. Were their truth and right. An eagle rapacity clawed its coveted good, beaks pecked and
pecked.
And talons tore all weaker prey in their sweet secrecy of pleasant sense. Nature they obeyed, and not a moralist god. Inconscient traders in boundless of contraries. They did what in others they would persecute. When their eyes looked upon their fellows' wives, an indignation flamed, a virtuous wrath, oblivious of their own deep hid offense. Mob-like, they stormed a neighbor caught in sin.
Thank you. Something to share, Don?
Why is this written in the past tense when what is written here is going on right now?
Yes, but this is a description, not of what Aswapati sees. So it's in the past tense.
I'm thought of sarcastic.
Yes. Actually, it's only in extremes that we see something like this. No, this frame of ethics knobbed with scriptural rules.
Knobbed.
It means there's a knob, the knob, there's a lump. So it can be a lump on the frame, but it suggests a stick that somebody can hit you with. No, it has a knob on the end. So these scriptural rules are used to punish people. So that kind of frame of ethics with its very strict, hard rules and punishments, or a theory. Maybe a theory that's passionately believed and praised, some kind of theory. An example of this, I would say, is what Rupert Sheldrake calls scientism. He says that the scientific way of looking at things is meant to be something impartial, and it's for investigation and so on. But he says in our world, this has become a dogma, a religious dogma. And if there's any researcher who dares to say anything that seems to challenge, he's given the Ten Commandments of scientism, what they are, no? That person's whole career will be ruined. He will not have any chance to advance in his profession or anything like that. No, he's just a heretic. Whatever he says, whatever he discovers, it's just worthless and nobody need pay it any attention. So it becomes like that, a kind of religion, a theory. It's only a theory, but it's passionately believed and praised. And so they think of it as if it's a heavenly tablet of law, like the laws of Moses, these revelations that have given. It's like this, or like the Quran, or whatever. And along with that goes this formal practice. There are rules about the way things you have to do, the way you have to make your sacrifices or your offerings or your behavior. But this is mailed and iron-shod. It's enforced by warriors in heavy armor. This rude and ruthless warrior kind who are enforcing this kind of rules. Sri Aurobindo says they've been drawn from the savage bowels of the earth, from the deepest, darkest levels. But it gives them this air of harsh nobility, proud, stern poise of harsh nobility. That's their civic posture, that's their public posture as citizens of this city which he's talking about, this capital city. But they are hypocrites. All their private acts belied this pose, completely different. All they care about, there's no nobility, power and utility. These are the only things they care about. And they are greedy, an eagle rapacity. They're like an eagle eating its prey with the sharp beaks and the talons, tearing it apart. No? Beaks pecked and talons tore all weaker prey, like a bird of prey, a raptor. And secretly, in their sweet secrecy of pleasant sins, those apparently virtuous warriors, no, are just obeying nature. They have nothing to do with that moralist God that they proclaim in public. They're inconscient, and they trade, they exchange in bundles of contraries, contradictions. And they do, their acts are just similar to what they would persecute in other people. And when they happen to see somebody do something wrong, when their eyes looked upon their fellow's vice, somebody just like them, then indignation flamed. How can he be like that? A virtuous wrath. He must be punished. They completely forgetful about their own offense. They keep that deeply hid from themselves and from other people. But they are ready to stone somebody to death for some offense. Mob-like, they stoned a neighbor caught in sin. So there are places and moments in human time when these things are prevalent. They come to the surface, they prevail for a time. But this is a typal world. It's until it's transformed, this plane, this realm is there. And it expresses itself in our world if there's an opening. Wherever love and light and largeness lack, then these forces, they can act.
I think the purpose of this role is to make us aware of these things, which actually people take for granted. They have these attitudes, they don't even think there's anything wrong with it.
Right.
He says, inconscient traitors in bundles of contraries.
Yes.
Yeah.
Lorraine, what do you read on? Last line on page 209.
A preference is judged within past false creeds, post worst inequities on equality. Inequities on equity base. Reasoned ill actions just sanction the scale, an emergent ego's interest and desire. Thus was a balance kept, the world would live. A zeal fervor pushed their ruthless coats. All faith, not theirs, blood scoured as heresy. They questioned, captivated, tortured, burned, or smoked, and forced the soul to abandon right or die. Amid their clashing creeds and warring sects, religion sat upon bloodstained throne. 100
tyrannies, oppressed and slew, and founded unity upon fraud and force.
Thank you. The judge within should be our soul, no? Our conscience that guides us and assesses what happens and what we see. But this is a pragmatist judge, and he just does according to his convenience. So he passes false decrees, and he's capable of posing worst iniquities, the most terrible things, as if that were something to do with equity, with justice. Uses the reason to justify ill actions, wrong actions. If that pragmatist judge sanctions the scale of the merchant ego's interest and desire, that scale that gives false information.
Whatever is done in the name of business and money making, it's justified.
Well, it's the ego. Whatever profits me, naturally that is worth more. You know? So in this way, a balance was kept. Their world, that terrible world, could live. And there were these cults worship, these ruthless cults, this zealot fervor, this tremendous drive. But they torture and scourge all faith that is different from their own. It's so partial. We know these things have happened in history and are still going on today.
The daily newspapers.
Yes. Forcing the soul to abandon right or die. So religion seems to be particularly blamable in this context, sitting on a blood-stained throne in 100 different forms of tyranny. It oppresses, kills, founds unity upon fraud and force, on deceit and compulsion. No, tell me. Yes.
Only what seemed was prized as real there. The ideal was a cynical spurt. Hooted by the crowd, mocked by enlightened wit, spiritual seeking wonder outcasted, a dreamer's self-deceiving web of thought, or machinera dimmed of orbit-priced faith, its passionate instinct traced through minds obscure, lost in the circuits of the ignorance. A lie was there the truth, and truth a lie. Here was the traveller of the upward way, for daring hell's kingdoms with the heavenly wood, pause or pass slowly through that terrible space, the prayer upon his lips and the great name. If probed not all the summoned scheme's fair point, he might stumble into falsity endlessly. Over his shoulder, often he must look back like one who feels on his neck an enemy's breath, else stealing up behind a treacherous blow, might prostrate cast and pinned to unholy soil, pierced through his back by every spoiling stake. So might one fall on the eternal world, forfeiting the spirit's lonely chains in time, and no news of him reach the waiting gods, marked missing in the register of souls. His name, the index of a failing hope, the position of a dead remembered star.
Thank you. So this is why we must be careful. We are travellers on the upward way, and this upward way passes close to hell's kingdoms. So when we feel that we are in a situation like that, we have to pause, pass slowly through that perilous space, a prayer upon his lips, and the great name, whatever that great name is for each of us. No? We have to use discernment. Our discernment, our power of soul's power of clear sight has to probe everything like a spear, because otherwise we might stumble and fall into the endless net of falsehood. We have to keep our vigilance off over his shoulder. Often he must look back like one who feels an enemy's breath on his neck, because otherwise he may get tacked from behind. A treasonous blow might make him fall flat and stake in his back, evil, pinned to the ground. If that happens, one might fall on the eternal's road and lose the purpose of this particular incarnation, forfeiting the spirit's lonely chance in time. And no news of him reach the waiting God. They'd be waiting. What's happened to him? No? Eventually, they'd have to mark his name missing in the register of souls. So that name marked missing, it's the index, it points to a failing hope. They keep hoping, no, but it marks the position of a star that was once there. They remember it, but now it's no longer there. These are the dangers. So how to keep safe? Would you read?
Only the safe who kept God in their hearts, courage their armor, faith their sword, they must walk, a hand ready to smit, the eye to scout, casting a javelin to the guard in front. Heroes and soldiers of the army of light, hardly even so, the grisly danger part.
Released.
Released into a calmer, purer air. They dared at length to breathe and smile once more. Once more they looked beneath the real sun. Through hell came rule. The spirit still had power.
Thank you. Let's pause there. So this is the way the soul can keep safe, no? A javelin regard, a regard like the gaze must be like a spear point, no? Of truth. The eye always on the alert. These are the heroes and soldiers of the army of light. And they can pass through this danger. No? Yes, you wanted to ask something?
I heard that they, in Orissa, the young people in the schools of Sri Aurobindo have declared that they are the army of light.
Great.
So this is, it's a phrase that's inspired a lot of people.
There's this prayer which they use in the ashram school, no? Every day. So, like that, they are able, even with difficulty, pass that terrible grisly danger and come out into a calmer, purer air. And then there's that sense of relief. They dared at length to breathe and smile once more, because once more they're moving beneath a real sun, not a sun of falsehood. Though hell claimed rule, the spirit still had power.
There's our hope right there. Nothing can conquer the eternal spirit.
Would you like to go on and read the last sentence? Line 330, this no man's land.
This no man's land we pass without debate. Him the heights, listen, him the abyss desired. Man stood across his way. No voice forbade, but swift and easy with the downward path, and now towards the night is turned his face.
So nobody tries to stop him. No danger on the downward path. Nobody tries to stop him. The higher levels, the heavens, they are sending him on this mission. And those lower levels, they're just waiting for him to come. Yeah. Swift and easy is the downward path. It's a proverb, no?
It's a proverb.
And no debate also. No debate also.
No debate, nothing. Yeah. Nobody stops him, because swift and easy is the downward path. And now Aswapati's face is turned towards the night. He's going down. So I think we have read to this point.
Yes.
And we could take the rest of our time to read a couple more sections. Yeah, he's going deeper and deeper and deeper. He wants to get right to the very bottom, and he will. He will get there, and nobody will stop him. I believe that these are descriptions of Sri Aurobindo's own experiences. Yeah.
I think to go along with this passage is that wonderful Sri Aurobindo Upanishad. Trudhalu sat there on Friday, and he talked about how only the Supreme Divine can take on this darkness, and this only he wants to go down into that. So
he's described it.
We were going home in the taxi, and there was so much hullabaloo in the traffic, you know. I just felt like saying, it's the world bliss only, it's the world bliss only, everybody laughed. Because it's very practical for our daily life, you know, all the irritations and things that go wrong.
Yes, Don.
To go to fairly modern literature, of course, this is also, there's a very wonderful play by George Bernard Shaw called Don Juan in the Count. And it describes one of the dark night, and how everyone in the play, which they know from Don Giovanni, pleased with it, except Don Giovanni, who then says, I have to go to heaven. It's a boring night.
Chitra.
A greater darkness waited, a worse rain.
one can endure all his beauties extreme. Yet the cloak, the uncloak is naked worst. There, all in truth, in the supernal light, had never been, for else had power no more. As when one sits in a deep moment's trance, over mind's border into another world, he crossed a boundary whose stealthy trace I could not see, but only the soul feel. Into an armored hero's domain he came, and saw himself wandering like a lost soul among grimed walls and savage slums of man. Around him crowded gray and squalid huts, neighboring proud paths of perverted power, inhuman quarters and demoniac wars. A pride in evil, hugged its wretchedness, a misery, haunting splendor, pressed close fell, dumb suburbs of the cities of dream life. There, life displayed to the spectator's soul the shadow depths of a strange miracle. A strong and fallen goddess without form, obscure, deformed by some dire Gorgon spell, as might a harlot empress in a
bush.
In a bush, new, unashamed, exulting, she appraised her revealed face of perilous beauty and charm, and drawing panic to a shuddering kiss, fixed the magnificence of her tattered breast, and lured to their abyss the spirits fall.
Thank you. Sebastian.
Across his field, fine she moved wide, as on a setting firm from moving, the implacable splendor of her nightmare pomps. On the dark background of the southwest world, she staged between the lurid light and shaped her drama of the sorrow of the dead, written on the agonized nerves of the living things. Epics of horror and grim mystery, dry sketches spent and stiffened in life's mud, the gloved hideous forms and hideous deeds paralyzed beauty in the heart and breast, in booths of sin and night repairs of vice, styled infants and bodies
concupiscence,
assorted imaginaries in flesh, turned lust into a decorative art, abusing nature's gift of perverse skill, immortalized the sound grain of living dead in a mud goblet, poured the bacchantic wine to a satyr gave the turdus of God, impure, sadistic, with grimacing mouth, great inventions, gruesome and macabre, came table vision from the gulfs of night.
Thank you. Helmut.
Ingenious monstrosity, impatient of all natural shape, the gate of new old lines, gave courage to start the illusion. And art parades of being destroyed forms, and gargoyle masks of siege and terror, tender tormented postures of homelessness. An inexorable evil's worship, she made violence great and sublimate good. Dragon call of terrified angels, and strange epitomes of rolling force, and certain grandeurs, fortune in the mind, true adoration to the demon's mind. All nature pulled out of her frame and base, and twisted into an unnatural color. The pulsion stimulated in birth desire. Agony was made the red spines to feel. Hatred was trusted with the work of life and torture needed to fall among the prayers. A ritual anguish consecrated to worship was offered to the undead. The newest pieces of journalist art that trained the mind to love what the soul hates, imposed allegiance in the quivering nerves, and forced the unwilling body to lie too sweet. Two harmonious to excite in this regime that soil of being scored during the time, perhaps even the right to sleep challenge in the place sensations. The world was called objects and sense of being.
Thank you. Thank you, Helmut. We can, somebody else can go on. Alice, will you go on? We're on page 213, and you can read on from line 415.
It's just that I can't hear. I have no idea where we are.
You couldn't hear?
If you could speak up, it would be nice. Yeah.
So you have a nice, strong voice. You read for us.
A race possessed?
No. We're on page... We're on page 213,
okay.
And we're at line 415.
Here, cold material intellect was the judge, and needed sensual prick and jog and lash, that its hard dryness and death dead nerves might feel, some passion and power and acrid point of light, a new philosophy, theorized evil's rights, gloried in the shimmering rock of decadence, gave to a python force persuasive speech and armed with knowledge, the primal root. Over life and matter, only brooding bound, mind changed to the image of a rampant beast. It scrambled into the pit to dig the truth and lighted its search with the subconscious flares. Thence bubbling rose, sullying the upper air, the filth and festering secrets of the abyss. This it called positive fact and real life. This now composed a fetid pastor, a wild beast. Passion crept from secret night to watch its prey with fascinating eyes. Around him, like a fire, with sputtering tongues, there lolled and laughed bestial ecstasy. The air was packed longings, root fierce, crowding and stinging, and monstrous swarm pressed with a noxious hum into his mind. Thoughts that could poison nature's heavenliest breath, forcing reluctant lids assailed the sight, acts that revealed the mystery of hell. All that was there was of this pattern made.
Thank you. So this is really a description of hell. Jocelyn, yes. Thank you. Margaret. Can you do it a little louder?
Looked like a
nearness to the gods, and uplift to heavenly state by the touch, or only enhanced by its enlightening ray. They in your nature, Brahma's prosody. Often a familiar visage studying, joyfully encountered at some dangerous point, hoping to recognize a look of life, this vision warmed by the spirit's inward eye, discovered suddenly health, treatment, trademarking, also with the inner sense that cannot err in the semblance of a fair or desired form, the demon and the goblin and the bull.
Thank you. Jean-Yves?
In silence, rain of cold stone parted, strength 90, obeyed, approved by the Titan's law, refused laughter of a giant cruelty, and feels glad deeds of all the violence. In that wild, cynic den of thinking beasts, one looked in vain for trace of pity, for long, there was no touch of sweetness anywhere, but only fog and its acolyte. Greed and hate. There was no help for suffering, none to save, none dare resist or speak another word. Armed with the ages of divining power, signing the edicts of her dreadful rule, and using blood and torture, the sea of darkness proclaimed her slogans to the world. A servile, wrinkled silence hushed the mind, only with repeated lessons taught. While mystery, holding the good shepherd's staff, falsehood and thorn on old and prostrate hearts, the curse and greeds that organize living death and slay the soul on the altar of the life.
Thank you. Mihong?
All were deceived or served their own deceit. Truth in their stifling atmosphere could not leave. Their wretchedness believe in its own joy, and fear and weakness hurt their abject death. All that is low and sordid thoughtful base, all that is dread and poor and miserable, greedy in a less content, its natural air, and felt no yearning of divine release, arrogant, giving, a more luminous state. The people of the gods despised the sun, a barrier, autarky, excluded light, fixed in its will to be its own great self. A bounty is known, unique, and a splendid type, is soothing its hunger with a venderous dream, flaunting its cross of the servant like a crown, long to its dismal, harsh autonomy, a bull throat below with its raising tongue, the heart and shameless clamor filling space, and threatening all who dared to listen to truth, claimed the monopoly of the battered ear, then accusations gave its vote, and the braggart dogmas shouted in the night, kept for the fallen soul, once deemed a god, pride of it, abysmal, absolute.
Thank you. Rita?
A lone discoverer in these menacing realms, guarded like termite cities from the sun, oppressed mid crowd and dram and noise and flare, passing from dust to deeper, dangerous dust, he wrestled with powers that snatched from mind its light and smote from him their clinging influences. Soon he emerged in a dim, wall-less space, for now the peopled tracts were left behind. He walked between white bands of fading eel. Around him grew a gaunt spiritual blank, a threatening waste, a sinister loneliness that left mind bare to an unseen assault, an empty page on which all that will could write stark, monstrous messages without control, a traveling dot on downward roads of dust, mid barren fields and barns and straggling huts, and a few crooked and phantasmal trees. He faced a sense of death and conscious void, but still a hostile light unseen was there, whose death-like poise, resisting light and truth, made living a bleak gap in nullity.
Thank you. Turiya.
He heard the grisly voices that denied, assailed by thoughts that swarmed like spectral balls, a prey to the staring phantoms of the gloom and terror approaching with its leathern mouth, driven by a strange will down, ever down. The sky above, the communique of gloom, he strove to shield his spirit from despair, but felt the horror of the growing night and the abyss rising to claim his soul, then seized the abode of creatures and their forms, and solitude wrapped him in its voiceless folds. All vanished suddenly like a thought expansion. His spirit became an empty, listening breath, void of the dead delusion of the world. Nothing was left, not even an evil face. He was alone with a green python knife, a dense and nameless nothing, conscious, mute, which seemed alive but without body or mind. Lasted all beings to annihilate that it might be forever viewed and sold, housing the shapeless beasts, intangible doors, crypt strangled by that lusting viscous blood, attracted to some black and giant mouth, and swallowing thought and a huge belly of doom. His being on its own vision disappeared, drawn towards death that hungered for its form.
Thank you. Manoha.
Formless void oppressed his struggling brain. The darkness grim and cold benumbed his flesh. A whispered grey suggestion chilled his heart. Hailed by a serpent force from its warm home and dragged to extinction in great vacancy, life clung to its seat with cords of gasping breath. Lapped was his body by a tenebrous tongue. Existence smothered, travailed to survive. Hope strangled, perished in his empty soul. Belief and memory abolished, died, and all that helps the spirit in its course. There, crawling through every tense and aching nerve, leaving behind its poignant, quaking trail, a nameless and unutterable fear.
Thank you, Avi.
I just see Neil's a victim, bound and still. The approach alarmed his mind forever down of an implacable eternity of pain, inhuman and intolerable. This he must bear, his hope of heaven estranged. He must ever exist without extinction's peace in a slow suffering time and tortured space, an anguished nothingness, his endless state. A lifeless vacancy was now his breast, and in the place where once was luminous thought, only remained like a pale, motionless ghost, an incapacity of faith and hope, and a dread convention of a vanquished soul, immortal still, but with God lost, self-lost, and God, and touch of happier worlds, but he endured still the vain terror, bore the smothering coil of agony and afraid. Then peace returned, and the soul sovereign gazed to to the blind horror of calm light repelled, replied to the blind horror of calm light, immutable, undying and unborn, mighty and mute the Godhead in him woke and faced the pain and danger of the world. He mastered the ties of nature with a look. He met with his bare state naked head.
We can stop there for today. Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.